This is Spreaker Web Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Numb Ghost Hunter, radio show bringing on tonight. I'm very happy because we have a very special guest, Mr. Antonio Perez from the group Aerial Phenomena. So a UFO group. I'm very, very happy, Antonio, to have you here tonight. So if you want to, I'd like to introduce yourself and to tell us your background and what got you into the UFO Aerial Phenomena.
Director and founder of a UFO group called the Aerial Phenomena Investigations Team, and we're primarily headquartered out of Annapolis and the Washington, D.C. area. Formerly, I was an Army counterintelligence officer, and I was also a special agent for the Department of Defense. And for those, pretty much for about 12 years, what I did was I worked on espionage cases and cold case squad. I also served in Iraq in 2003. Currently, my full-time job is as a future technology consultant for a company called Booz Allen Hamilton here in Washington, D.C. Clients are primarily classified clients, and what I do is I look for what type of technology threats are threats to my clients. Not necessarily near threats, but what threats are 20 or 30 years out into the future that can have an impact on our Department of Defense. I have a bachelor in computer information systems from New York and also a master's in space studies.
So, my goodness. So, and you know, I saw that you have 13 members on your team, and I saw a lot of very impressive, an astronomer, a pilot. So, can you tell a little bit about your team members?
Yeah, first, I'd like to hit on that I have a very mixed group of ufologists and investigators in the team. And what I mean by that is that I specifically selected them not only for their specialties and their background, but also what their views are regarding UFOs. For example, we have several are skeptics. Then we have several on the other end of the spectrum that are true believers of UFOs. And then we have those that are in the middle of the road. They're either skeptics or believers, but they look for the evidence and then they make a decision on a case-by-case method. So I have myself as the not only the director, but also kind of the case control officer. The cases come in, I triage them, and then I assign them appropriately to which investigator has the necessary background for that case. For my tech support, video support, etc., I have Cherish. She's from Indiana, but also living in Annapolis. One of some of my senior investigators, I have Paul. Paul is a smart guy, has a physics background from Johns Hopkins, works for NASA, and he currently works on unmanned spacecraft. Ken Pfeiffer, he's my investigator out of Jersey, and he's a former Air Force. He's a pilot. He's been doing ufology for, I believe, almost 30 years. And if you go on his website, it's my understanding that he has the largest collection in the world of UFO photos.
My goodness.
Gallery of UFOs. I have Craig. Craig is one of my senior researchers. He worked for the Department of Social Services for over 30 years. Great guy. Excellent in doing research for me. Marsha is one of my smartest investigators. She is the type that will leave no stone unturned, and she writes her reports very well. I have Pat Teofreda from Maryland. She does primarily most of the initial research. I get a UFO case. She does normal, quick background check on the witness. She looks for historical reporting of the same type of activity, UFO activity. I have Nancy, also from Baltimore. She's one of my field investigators. Ray is what I call a special investigator. He primarily does the alleged abduction cases. He's been with MUFON for a while, and he's also studying psychology. in grad school, so that's why he gets the alleged abduction cases. I also have Pat Holbert from Maryland. She's one of my true believers in UFOs. Great girls have boards. Shane is my only international investigator. He's out of Canada, up in the Niagara Falls area. Great guy, very smart. And then my newest member is Jackie, from Maryland. She's a dean in a community college up in District of Columbia. Also been with MUFON for a couple of years. So that's pretty much a quick synopsis of the team.
So that's a very big team, and you know, I love this so much. The on your website, you know, the if it is a miracle, any sort of evidence will answer, but if it is a fact, proof is necessary. So, in your field, that is exactly what it is. You know, when you get I don't know, somebody calling you, or tweeting you, or you know, Skyping you about a UFO, how does it work? How do you go from, you know, okay, we're going to do this investigation? Do you first meet the client and then decide if it warrants an investigation, or, you know?
I go through a triage process. I get anywhere between 5 to maybe 10 cases a week. And I kind of have a point scoring method on what cases get open and what cases don't get open. And that is the amount of information. You know, if you go on the website, you have some very basic stuff that I request when you submit a report, and that's, you know, it's your name, how can I contact you for an interview, whether it's by phone or email, and then I need specifics like the date of the event, the location, time, the type of object that you saw, shape, you know, and a quick synopsis. More importantly, if you have any type of evidence, whether it's photo, physical, video, audio, can you provide a sketch? So those are the things that I look for. And if I get all that stuff, it goes to the top of the list. If I get half of that stuff, the middle of the list. And if I get, you know, just, you know, I saw a UFO and that's it, you know, then those type of cases I normally don't pursue. I just don't have the manpower and the time. Those cases. And then I also look at, you know, I've been an investigator for 12 years now, you know, and I always look for little things in the synopsis that'll lead me to believe, you know, this is a legit case, they actually want an investigation, or this is a hoax, or this is a joke. You know, I get the pranks all the time, you know, lizard invasion or et cetera, stuff like that. Those things I don't entertain. So that's what I do, you know, and then, I look at the caseload. I see what investigators, what they're currently working on, and whether they need another case. You know, some of the bigger cases that warrant, you know, a little more attention, usually I assign two investigators to those cases.
Okay, and when you do an investigation, you know, most of the time it's outdoors. And like you said before, when we talked before the show, you said that 90% of your cases are UFOs, and most of them are outdoors. So you do it during the winter, during the summer. And how many cameras and what kind of equipment do you use to do your investigations?
Sure. I would say 90% of the cases we get are usually after-the-fact reports. Kind of, we're almost like a response unit, you know, the 911. Somebody calls and says, I saw a UFO. And sometimes that could be I saw it yesterday or I saw it 20 years ago. And, you know, so we kind of, that's also part of the triage. When did this happen? And normally it's you know, we saw something in the sky. And so we try to get as much information as possible. And if it warrants, if it's close by and if it warrants for us to go out there physically, not only to meet the witness, but for them to show us exactly where they saw this object, then we'll go out there. But if this is something that happened 20 years ago out in Utah, you know, that's something that probably won't go out to investigate. Normally, I always ask for a minimum of two investigators to go out with me to any location, and that's primarily for safety purposes. I mentioned earlier, you know, I don't like my guys going out into the woods or out into the desert by themselves. And that's just for safety purposes. Always go out with a fellow investigator, two, three, and even better. And we have a record, you know, wide range of equipment. All my guys have cameras, and you know, I can list everything For the stuff that I personally have, you know, I have a professional Canon 50D with multiple zoom lenses. I have PDF7 night vision goggles. I have professional mics. I have, you know, a whole list of equipment in here. And, you know, I even have a Geiger counter. I have an EMF detector, things like that, that sometimes warrant the use of them. So it depends on the invest, you know, the actual report. If I get something like it's an alleged landing of a UFO at some remote site, I'll bring usually all my equipment. If it's something that's a flyby or looks like it's natural phenomena, usually I'll just bring the cameras along with me, and maybe my night vision goggles and things like that. And that's because a lot of these cases, again, is after the fact, and very little that, you know, you get a case where you actually show up and a UFO, you know, shows up as well. So that's one in a million. And in fact, there was only one case that we had that the witness allegedly said that he can summon the UFO. And we just looked at it pretty quickly.
And, you know, just before we went on air, you talked about a case that you did yesterday, and I found it very interesting because that's exactly the what you just said about most of the time we don't find anything. But you had a guy saying that he saw a UFO multiple times, and it turned out to be what you saw was a natural phenomenon, I think, huh?
Well, the case is, I'm going to post it on the website. I think some of it's on the website. It's 12-050. It was right here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, one of the things I first look at is, okay, this guy submitted a report seven times. So he's obviously wants some type of attention or somebody to at least take a crack at this. So, you know, he allegedly said that he was able to see a alien probe hovering over the Washington, D.C. area on multiple occasions. And... you know, so I take the report, and we kind of made we were able to go out there last night, actually, up in Washington Heights in Maryland, and, you know, it was three of us. We interviewed the witness for 2 hours, and he said that this is one of the cases where we brought up most of our equipment. And then he said, yeah, it usually shows up around 9:05, you know, every night. And immediately I start thinking, okay, this is probably something celestial. You know, he's giving me an exact time. And an exact spot in the sky. And so 9:05, you know, came up, and he points to the sky. He goes, there it is. There's the probe. And, you know, I'm looking at the object in the sky. It's at the zenith. You know, we pull out our equipment. We pull out the star charts. We pull out the zoom lenses, telescopes, night vision goggles, you name it. And, you know, we were honest with the guy. We said, hey, you know, you're looking at the star Vega. That's what it is, you know. And he goes, well, how come it looks like this on the camera? So he showed me his Panasonic camera, and it looks like it's wobbling and moving, and it's growing and shrinking, and it's like zigzagging. And we tell him, well, that's a combination of a lot of things. First of all, that's your camera. It's on autofocus, so it's trying to you know, focus on this object that's 25 light years away. So the optics is it's giving the illusion that the star is growing and shrinking. And then the second thing was that he had these blinking blue and red colors of the object. And we were like, okay, that's natural. That's called atmospheric prismatic dispersion. And that's it's almost like the twinkle little star. It's just the atmosphere that's giving the appearance that's giving those colors. And then the third was that the appearance that it was zigzagging, it was like, hey, you're not using a tripod. Your hand is shaking. And, you know, and that's what it was. And to satisfy this, we actually replicated the event. So we took out the camera. We put the camera on autofocus. We kind of shake the camera a little bit, you know, try to hold it with a steady hand. And we did a side-by-side comparison, and it was about a 95% identical match to what he had.
You did a factor of fate out of yourself. I love this show so much. You know, that's exactly what they do. And most of their cases are UFO cases. So you guys could make a great team together, because that's 99% of people, you know, what you just said right now, you know, they wouldn't know that all these things about being 25 million years away, and you know the fact that the camera shakes and everything. So and your background and everything, you know, really helps you to, like we said earlier, not to debunk, but to educate people about the ufology.
Me, oh, did you debunk that case last night? And I thought, look, we're not debunkers. We want to educate the public, you know, on what UFOs are and what UFOs aren't. You know, every time I go up to give a presentation or a speech about what I do, I always start off with, hey, you know, it's been 50, 70, 8 years or whatever that ufologists have been studying this phenomena, and even for today, you know, evidence of extraterrestrial life is elusive as ever. It's elusive. And my personal opinion is that the lack of proof beyond reasonable doubt is leading ufologists to be synonymous with things like Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster. You know, these, you go to a bookstore, where do you find books on UFOs? You find them in these corners, shelves where they entertain all these other things about conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And I think what happened was, you know, it's unfortunate, and ufology was once a worthy subject, and sadly, it's been hijacked by, you know, this convergence of armchair UFO investigators, conspiracy theorists, hoaxers, you know, and you said it yourself, you can go online and see these thousands of cheesy photos of flying saucers and videos that anybody can do with CGI. So ufology 50, 60 years ago was something that was worthy, and now it's something that people just laugh at when they look at you. You know, I tell people what I do, and they think I'm crazy, and they're laughing at me. You know, and that what I'm trying to do is change that back to what it should be, is a worthy subject, because you know there is possible extraterrestrial life out there, and is it visiting Earth? I don't know, and hopefully one day we'll get the answer.
You're right, and you know the fact that, like you said on your website, you stay a lot away from the conspiracy theories and, you know, aliens and stuff like that. And you guys are so well educated, and the way you present your evidence and the videos you post on YouTube and the tweets that you do on Twitter, you know, it's always, you know, with scientific background and always with letting people think what they think. You know, you're not out there saying, you know, this is a UFO, this is not a UFO. And when you exactly, that's what I love about, that's what got me interested in your group at the first place, because when I started on Twitter about a year ago, I think you were the first team that I followed, and you were probably the first team that followed me back with Maine Ghost Hunters.
Believers. No matter what you told them, little green men in silver suits are visiting Earth in their little flying saucers. And I think in the last 7 months, they slowly, they're learning what ufology is. They're learning the nuts and bolts of investigations. They're learning to stay away from conspiracy websites. And they're still believers, but now they when they look at UFO reports, they look at it from a different perspective now, a different mindset. And so, you know, just yesterday, one of my investigators, who true believer, who, you know, totally believes in real green men, now she's, every time she gets a UFO case, she always, you know, wants to give it a little more attention than what she would have done, you know, years ago. But you're right, you know, there's a lot of things out there that derail ufology, and that's these conspiracy websites that are out there, and... Now, that doesn't mean that we don't believe in extraterrestrial life. It's just that we remove the variables that I think is derailing a worthy subject.
Exactly. And, you know, we talk about earlier, before we went on air, that, you know, paranormal groups, UFO groups, cryptology groups, you know, all a big family, because when people don't want to believe, whether we show them a true UFO or the truest ghost you'll ever see in your life, they can always think that it's been faked or that it was a reflection or whatever. So we'll never be able to convince these people. So what we're out there to do is to try to help the field grow and have more people believe that we're trying to scientifically prove what's going on and document things. And, you know, we might never get all the answers, because if we did, we probably answer the two biggest questions in the world. You know, is there life after death? Is there truly aliens visiting Earth. So, you know, that would be the two biggest questions in the world answered by. So I don't think with humility, we're probably never going to be able to prove anything, but just doing it professionally and helping the customers. When people call you, and some people are probably sometimes scared, you know, and if you can come up with answers, it can ease their mind. Or if it's true, you know, you find. Have you ever found real evidence of UFOs or crash sites or
No.
stuff like that?
And no, and I don't think anybody could say they did, because, you know, actual physical proof beyond a reasonable doubt that aliens exist is lackluster at best. And most, you know, most UFO organizations out there, including mine, you know, 90% of the cases we close, maybe up to 95, usually we're able to identify what the object was, whether it was a man-made object, you know, some type of aircraft, a lens flare, dirty camera, you know, natural phenomena, or even a hoax. And then the other 5%, if you look at any of my cases or any of the big organizations out there, most of the rest of their 5% are usually closed as unresolved or unidentified. And unidentified, in the strictest sense, means unidentified. So you can't attribute something that you haven't been able to identify as extraterrestrials or something from a different planet. Too many people want to lean towards that direction, that, you know, there's a saucer in the sky, it has to be from a different planet. Well, you know, that's not what we do. You know, we wanna, you know, from a nuts and bolts perspective, is try to identify what the person saw, and not lean to conclusions that we can't, you know, provide actual proof. Because there isn't. I don't think there's anybody else that can stand in the front of a stage and say, "Here it is. I've got proof of extraterrestrial life." And if they do, it's normally some type of cheesy video or some type of photo or a rumor of some government person that says there's a UFO, you know, in some warehouse or some secret base. It's always a, you know, third-party information or hearsay or some type of, you know, anonymous video or something. It's never, "Here it is. Here's
Hard
a little
proof, you
man
know?
in front of CNN telling them why they're here."
Exactly. And you know what? 90% of your cases are UFOs, but there's another 10% that is very, to me, very interesting, is the abduction cases. And you told me before that, you know, most of the times, how do these cases turn out?
Alien abduction cases in the last 6 months, and well, the first thing I always noticed is that these people have a story to tell, and usually the story involves things like memory loss, nightmares, things that tend to lead me to believe that these people need either some type of psychological or mental evaluation, and that's not a bad thing. Given that's not what we do. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And we don't do hypnosis. That's not what my team does. So normally these type of cases, I pass them on to my Ray. He's my investigator in Jersey, and he's also studying psychology. So normally he just takes the report, he talks to the person, gets their you know, what happened, where was there any type of UFO involved and stuff like that. And normally what we do is we research for some type of group or a support person out there that in their area that actually does this kind of stuff, and we'll network and pass the case on to them. But alien abduction cases are very tricky, at least with the four or five that we've actually were able to open.
To open. And you know, you talked about one case, but a very interesting one, between the link between our field, the paranormal, and the ufology. So can you tell me more about that case that you had a few months ago, I think?
Not even that, about a week ago, 12051 out of Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. A witness reached out to me saying that he had a possible close encounter with an extraterrestrial. And after he elaborated more, was that him and his wife were doing a paranormal investigation in their home. And during the EVP session and the video session, they captured some type of anomaly, a voice recording that they couldn't understand what it was. So he passed it on to me. I looked at the video. You know, it could, it, it, you know, people want to see what they want to see. It kind of looks like an alien. It's fairly fuzzy. But I was more interested in the EVP, and I didn't understand the EVP. It was something that just sounded pretty weird and scary. But you know what I did was I kind of leaned towards, okay, this is paranormal, because he had told me that the house was, you know, over 100 years old and it was used as a funeral home for over 30 years. So that rang a bell to me real quickly. First, he's doing the paranormal investigation. He's telling me this is a funeral home, etc. So I have a couple of friends up in London, the Northeast Paranormal Investigation Team, and I passed it on to them. Hey, can you look at this data? Tell me what you think of it. And you know, they ran it through some software, and they're leaning towards that it was something demonic, and not extraterrestrial. So I was like, okay, thanks. You know, we're going to close the case. We don't do paranormal investigations. You know, they're interesting, you know, this is a good case where both ufologists and a paranormal team can work hand in hand in figuring out what is going on here. How can we help the witness? And then the appropriate team will take the lead in the case.
Exactly, and just before we leave, because we have 4 minutes left, I want to do a 1 hour show. I swear that this is probably going to be my last 30-minute interview, because you guys are so interesting that we just get started and it's already over. But I wanted to touch. I don't want to spoil everything, because you said something is coming up, but I just saw your video that you posted from Area 51. So to me, I've been there, you know, visiting just a few years ago when I was to Vegas, and. And I saw Rachel, Nevada, with that big alien restaurant and everything. So to me, it's mystical. And I saw that you were doing an investigation in Area 51.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I have a little bucket list of things I want to do, documentaries that I want to do. And Area 51 was on the top of my list. And, you know, I don't want to talk about it too much, you know, it's kind of a surprise, but it's really the documentary is about the history behind the Nellis Range, and why are so many ufologists or UFO believers attracted to this area, and then, you know, it's also about, you know, how this convergence of conspiracy theories and hoaxes and et cetera made Area 51 synonymous with aliens and ufology. So it's a 35-minute documentary. One-third of it is about the history behind Nellis Air Force Base. Another one-third is how Area 51 got its name. Where did that name actually come from? What type of classified projects were working there? You know, things like that. And then the other third, the final third is, you know, in the 1940s, how this big UFO wave kind of made Area 51 synonymous with aliens and UFOs. You know, it's an open documentary. I always end it with, I leave the answer to you. I'm not gonna, you know, I don't lean the documentary towards there's nothing there or there's aliens there. I leave it to the viewer to decide on him and herself or what they think is there.
And When where will we be able to get the documentary? Is it something we're going to be able to buy from your site, or are you going to post it on YouTube?
I'm not in this for the money. I had a deal with Discovery Channel. It looks like it's going through. When they air it, that's up to them. But it'll be sometime, you know, probably in a couple of weeks up on YouTube, or most likely I'll try to upload it on my website.
Oh, I can't wait to see it, because actually I've seen your videos and I really love the way you present it, and I'm probably your biggest fan out there, you know. And if you ever need a guy in Montreal area, you know, I'm your man. Anytime you guys have something, you know, you can call me up. And you know, I really love this. This is a field that's always attracted me, and I respect what you guys do and your team. And it was so nice talking to you. Very good guy, and I was very honored to have you on my podcast. Thank you very much, Antonio.
Yeah, I just want to end it up with our next big case and documentary is going to be over in Utah, doing the Skinwalker Ranch. So sometime late summer, early fall, I'll go out there, same synopsis. scenario is the RFT one. I'm gonna go see what's out there, and then I'll release a documentary as well.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. So keep me posted on Twitter, and we'll keep talking. And maybe in the future, you know, I'd like to have you back and talk more about upcoming investigations.
Anytime, buddy. Just give me a call or just tweet me, and I'll be there.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye.